Chapter 18.
Secure for departure,
Kanu said.
Close all locks, disconnect all bridges and umbilicals.
If I might trouble you,
the Margrave said,
I feel you should know that the consolidation intruders are closing rapidly on Underthrace.
Aren't they running into the other eagles?
It's nothing they aren't prepared for, I'm afraid. Of course, if they were encountering anything more intimidating than barely organized ruffians, well, my people will give them a welcome they won't forget, but I cannot promise miracles. I know you would rather wait until your ship is totally ready, but if you wish to avoid local difficulties...
I understand. Margrave, this may be a silly question, but might you be safer aboard the ship rather than remaining in Underthrace?
Could your ship keep me alive? Would you have the means of returning me to Europa once you are underway?
I don't know,
Kanu said.
I suppose there are escape capsules, maybe a shuttle or lander.
But you will most likely have need of such things when you reach your destination. No, I cannot put you to that much trouble, not when you have problems of your own. It's very kind of you, Kanu, but my home is here.
And Nissa?
She's safely out of harm's way.
Thank you, Margrave. When my family has a chance to show its gratitude, well, we will. You can count on that.
The console changed its displays.
Emergency launch readiness now achieved,
the ship informed him.
Estimated risk factor below 10%.
Sealing charges primed and ready, Margrave.
As they will ever be.
Then we're launching. Good luck with Underthrace. I can't promise I'll be in touch for a little while, but...
Our thoughts go with each other. Farewell, Kanu.
Goodbye, Margrave.
Kanu readied himself for the jolt of acceleration, but when the clamps relinquished their hold, he felt only the mildest of shoves, no more violent than the movement of an elevator. So far, so good. At least the docking clamps were functional. But the true tests lay ahead. He had yet to start the engine. Next came a barely felt crash as the rising ship crunched through the glass cupola at the top of the enclosing building. Since the water pressure had been the same on either side of the cupola, nothing slowed the ship's progress. Kanu felt the occasional scrape or grind of resistance, but nothing that should trouble the hull. And then they were through, clear of Underthrace and in the black void of the sea. The ship was still accelerating as smoothly as if it were being pushed up from below by a giant piston. Of course, it was one thing to punch through Underthrace, and quite another to reach space itself.
Kanu, said a voice off to his right, might now be an opportune moment to speak.
He jerked around in the seat, convinced until that moment that he had the ship to himself. The frock-coated Swift was standing by the wall next to one of the alcoved figures. His hands were laced demurely before him like a butler waiting for instructions. Kanu drew breath and started to speak, but before he could utter a word, Swift raised a hand.
I'm not physically here, just a figment.
I knew that.
There was never a satisfactory time to present myself aboard Nissa's ship, and besides, you had enough to be getting on with.
And this is your idea of a satisfactory time?
This is an excellent time.
Swift gestured at the surroundings of the control deck.
This is a fine piece of engineering by human standards, but you have only limited experience with the operation of spacecraft, and, I think it's fair to say, none at all in a ship of this nature. Very shortly, though, its capabilities will be put to the test. You will need maximum knowledge of the ship, what it can do, and just as crucially, what it cannot. I suggest that you allow me, the machine part of you, to take precedence, at least until we're in free space.
You don't know this ship any better than I do.
That is true, but I can learn faster. I also have a great deal of technical knowledge to draw upon, and the not inconsiderable advantage of being utterly infallible in my decision-making. We will hit the ice in about 8 minutes, if those depth readings are to be trusted. I think that should be sufficient time for me to master the controls.
Kanu knew that a moment like this was coming. The moment when he had no option but to surrender himself to the machines.
You didn't need to ask, did you? You're so much a part of me now that you could have taken me over at any point, hijacked complete control of my nervous system.
If the integration were not as thorough as it is, Swift said, it would have been easily detected. To answer your question, though, yes. I could have assumed control at any time, and I will do so in an instant if your life is imperiled. But as this situation is not quite that critical, I thought it polite to ask first. We have, I believe, just under 7 minutes and 30 seconds left now. Will you allow me, Kanu?
At least one life, possibly much more than one life, hinged on this moment. For an instant, it was more than he could bear, but if he did not give himself completely to Swift, there was no point in carrying on. He had come this far, from the limbo of death on Mars, to serve one truth. The machines were not his enemy, and he was not theirs.
Do it.
Swift walked over to Kanu, slipped his form through the horseshoe console as if it were made of gas, and lowered himself into the chair Kanu already occupied. The figment's body folded neatly into the same space and submerged beneath Kanu's skin. For a breath or two, Kanu felt no change. Then, Swift had him. Since the thing inside his head was entirely biological, a separate personality utilizing the same meat substrate on which his own consciousness now ran, Swift could only communicate with the outside world via the channels of Kanu's own senses. He could not address the ship directly, or read its mysteries via some direct neural connection. But he could see, and speak, and listen, and make Kanu's hands move with card-sharp speed across the console. Kanu, in turn, felt himself being ruthlessly puppeteered. The muscles and tendons in his arms were not used to interpreting such a barrage of nerve signals. His eyes moved from one focus to another so quickly that Kanu's visual flow shattered. He could feel the ocular muscles being cruelly overclocked, made to run faster than nature had intended. He visualized himself as he might have appeared had anyone been there to witness him, a man in a chair, twitching and jerking, as if in the throes of a seizure or some prolonged electrical execution. He was even speaking, or rather giving out short, yelping utterances that bore little resemblance to Swahili, or indeed any human language for that matter. But the ship understood. It understood, and it was talking back, giving Swift the information and resources he needed. When Swift relinquished absolute control, Kanu felt the cutting of the puppet strings as an almost psychic severance. He slumped back in the seat, drained, and in no small amount of pain after the way he had been manipulated. Swift was still there, though, his presence riding Kanu's consciousness like a passenger.
I've made some adjustments to the display options. If you look up, the view through the ceiling shows exactly what is above us as we ascend. As you can see, the Margrave has not let us down. The charges are detonating.
They were still looking through inky kilometers of ocean, so the light reaching Kanu's eyes must have been amplified many times. Nonetheless, the stuttering milky flashes, like the lightning from a storm system well over the horizon, could only be the demolition charges sown through the ice when the ship was first entombed. There appeared to be no end to the explosions. Dozens, then hundreds of separate pulses of light, tracing a cobweb of radial and concentric lines. They were shattering the overlying ice, rendering it locally weak, rather than blasting it away in a single massive detonation. 20 kilometers of it was pulverized, ice turning to slush, slush to water, water to steam, while great chunks, house or palace-sized, remained intact.
It's not enough, Kanu said. We've miscalculated. We'll never punch through that.
It will be sufficient. As soon as there is a clear passage to space, the water will begin to geyser out into the vacuum. That in turn will help disperse the remaining fragments. Besides, the charges are still detonating.
He must have sown thousands of them. For a human, he has shown remarkable thoroughness.
I am not sure he'd take that as a compliment.
Carnu's faith in the Margrave was not misplaced. As the ship closed the distance to the ceiling, so the explosions finally pushed a channel through to the outside, a portal to the rest of the universe, and from that moment the process became self-sustaining as the water turned instantly to vapor and the rocketing vapor forced the remaining fragments further apart.
"Core initializing," Swift reported. "Momentum will carry us through the breach and we'll switch immediately to full Chibaza thrust before your Europa pulls us back. That will be the moment of maximum risk, Carnu. On the positive side, if things do go wrong, there's little likelihood of you knowing about it. I should brace if I were you. Our passage will still be a little bumpy."
And it was. Ice clanged and scraped against the hull on all sides, but Carnu was reasonably certain that such things had been allowed for. Even so, he gripped the arms of his seat and jammed his head hard against the headrest. The vibrations made his eyes blur. He closed them and willed this to be over. The rough passage reached a moment of maximum turbulence, and then the knocks and clangs and ice rumbles began to diminish. A moment or two later, they were clear. The ride, perfectly smooth, and Carnu felt himself begin to float from the chair until the restraint redoubled its hold on him.
"Clear of the surface," Swift said. "Pivoting to bring drive exhaust clear of the horizon. Ignition in 3, 2.
When weight returned, it felt as if someone had driven a mallet into the base of his spine. He sensed a bony shockwave moving up to his skull, the compression and relaxation of vertebrae, the sequence stressing of nerves and muscle groups, gravity reaching and then exceeding Europa's pull. Had to be 1G, maybe 2. Swift was really gunning it.
1/3 of a G, Swift said, adding insult to Carnu's discomfort. Chibaza core operating normally. The ship will run some automatic calibration checks, then increase to 0.5 G. Congratulations, Mr. Akinia. You have yourself a starship.
At last, Carnu opened his eyes. He still felt jammed into the seat, oppressed by cruel force.
It works.
Early days, I believe is the expression. Still, to have come this far is unquestionably something. Have you considered a name for this ship?
It's obvious, isn't it? Icebreaker. That's what it should have been all along.
Icebreaker it is, then. There's a family connection to that name, isn't there? Some other ship?
If you say so, Swift.
Carnu felt none of the triumph he had expected. Only a nagging, ulcerous guilt, a sense that he had fled the scene of a crime.
Will the wound heal?
Soon enough. Actually, we've done very little harm compared to the damage inflicted by natural impactors over billions of years, and just as Europa's ice has reformed over those wounds, so it will eventually seal this gap.
I hope the Margrave is all right.
So do I. But right now we have our own concerns. Our emergence point has naturally become the focus for those consolidation vehicles. They are attempting to close on us.
And if they get within range and try to stop us?
Judging from these control interfaces, we appear to have weapons. Your family obviously thought they might come in useful.
Carnu had spent enough time under the shadow of the Martian defense fortresses that the thought of space weapons did not immediately revolt him. The consolidation vehicles would certainly be armed, even if most of those armaments could be excused as normal precautionary hardware. Space was full of things that sometimes needed to be shot out of the way or destroyed. Sometimes those things were other ships.
We won't use them except in self-defense. Is that understood, Swift?
Self-defense is an exceedingly elastic concept. Would you be so good as to narrow the parameters?
Before he could answer, the console chimed.
Incoming transmission from one of the enforcement vehicles, Swift said, addressed directly to you. Who could know you are aboard when we've barely started our journey?
You know exactly who, if you've been riding inside my head since Mars. Yevgeny Korsakov.
Korsakov's face loomed large before Kanu, superimposed over the forward area of the window. He looked, if anything, even older than when they had last spoken, his skin collapsing into the event horizon of his skull, which would soon claim everything near it. The collar of his Yuan uniform was too generous for his neck, as if he'd pulled the wrong outfit from the wardrobe, a wizened child wearing his father's uniform.
Well, Kanu, I had my suspicions, but they didn't come close to this. You'll forgive me for shadowing you in this fashion.
There was almost no time lag now.
Everyone needs a pastime, Yevgeny. I'm just sorry I became yours.
Oh, don't feel bad about it. It wasn't your fault. If I blame anyone, it's myself.
Really?
I should have listened to my instincts.
Your instincts ended my career. Wasn't that enough?
Evidently not. In fact, all I've really done is facilitate something else. Isn't that true? You'd have done your best to leave Mars, no matter what I said or did.
It must be nice to have all the answers.
I'd like a few more. You've done very well with that ship, Kanu, and in the long run, I know we'll never stop you reaching interstellar space. But we're in the short run right now. These enforcement craft can easily outpace you, and we have the means to disable your ship. Don't make this any harder than it needs to be.
Since when have you been a mouthpiece for the consolidation?
Our differences look slight now compared to the danger you pose. I agreed to an information exchange with our allies in the consolidation. They were more than willing to accommodate me.
Which ship are you in?
Does it matter?
It might. I am not a traitor. I have not sided with the machines or turned my back on humanity. I love humanity. I love my own people. But the machines are an opportunity, a chance to do great things together. Between us, we must confront the Watchkeepers, or at least find out what they want of us.
How did they turn you, Kanu? How did the machines make you see everything through their eyes?
They didn't. I chose my own path. I'm still choosing it now.
When Korsakov replied, all the reasonableness had gone. It was as if he had given up any hope of negotiation.
I cannot persuade you to stop, Kanu, but you should be aware of our capabilities. You will receive no warning shot across your bows when our long-range weapons lock onto you.
I understand, Yev. And you know I won't stop. That's clear, isn't it?
I suppose it is, Kanu.
Then, for the love of God, please turn around. I am also armed.
You may be misguided, Kanu, but I know you are not a murderer. You were an ambassador, a man who stood for peace and negotiation, for the non-violent solution. You won't fire on us. You don't have it in you.
You're right, Kanu answered. I was an ambassador, and I stood for all those things. I believed in them with all my heart, but then I died.
He offered them one last chance to abandon the chase. When Korsakov refused, Kanu gave Swift the order to fire on the pursuing craft, once more allowing Swift control of his body. It was supposed to be the minimum effective force, a disabling shot. He was certain Swift had done his best to comply, but in space, there was sometimes no option but to kill. Afterwards, with the memory of the two amplified flashes, two virtually simultaneous detonations still fresh in his mind, Kanu felt no sense of relief or escape. With their present speed and course, and the power available in reserve, Swift assured him there was no real prospect of any further trouble. The drive was functioning perfectly, the ship capable of much more than it was already giving. They had cleared Jovian space and were now burning out of the elliptic, soon to be moving faster than any other human-made thing within a light-year of the sun.
Their losses were regrettable, of course, but they were given every chance
Kanu told Swift to get out of his head, at least for the moment, to shut up and make himself invisible. Alone, he stumbled on weak muscles to the bathroom nearest to the control deck. It was small but functional. He fell to his knees and vomited, but for all his nausea and revulsion, almost nothing came up. The dry heaving burned his throat and made him feel worse. His eyes stung. He was crying, in discomfort and loathing. He had done the worst thing, the act he had never expected to commit, the sin above all others. He had taken another life, maybe several, and done so not in a blaze of terror or anger, but in a cold assessment of his chances, because it needed to be done, and he could not allow himself to fail. Nothing excused it. He was still weeping when he became aware of a presence standing over him, looking down. "I told," he began, certain it was Swift, outside his head again. But the presence knelt down, took his head between her hands, and for a moment looked on the verge of some tremendous kindness, a kiss to banish his shame. It was Nissa Mbaye. Instead, she slapped him hard across the face.